This is Holly Solis interviewing Monica Keys for the Undocumented Voices Project on April 28th, 2015. Okay, could you just, to start out, could you just tell me where you're from?
Yep, I'm from Ruidoso, New Mexico.
Okay, so when did you come to Arizona and ASU?
2011.
Okay, how did you come over? Like, what brought you over here?
My dad's always lived here, and then I came here for a graduate program.
What graduate program is that?
The higher ed, master's in higher education program.
Okay, what do you do now?
Now I'm an academic advisor for undecided students, essentially.
Can you explain exactly what you do?
So help freshmen and sophomore students either as they're selecting their majors and making sure that they're working towards classes that are going to keep them on track to a four-year graduation while being able to explore, you know, everything from engineering to creative writing or whatever, you know, all 380 majors we have.
Okay, have you encountered any undocumented students within that kind of work?
I have not. No, I've been in this position, I just, for 1 year and like 2 days now. So in this position, no, I haven't.
Mm-mm. Okay.
Not in my like daily, day to day. I mean, of course through Dream Zone and stuff like that, but not through my job. Mm-hmm. At least none that have disclosed to me.
So what brought you into the movement? What brought you to Dream Zone?
So I was working with international students when I first moved here. I was doing, helping schools around the U.S. recruit international students from Latin America specifically. And I was, before that, I was living in Washington, D.C., and I had done some advocacy work in the LGBT community, which, so I kind of had a little bit of advocacy background, but I wasn't really doing it anymore. And then I came here and was still doing my recruiting job, and then I was going to school here as well, and then I heard about the Dream Zone project. But through my work with international students, I was involved in, there's an organization called NAFSA, and it's N-A-F-S-A, and it's the Association of International Educators, and they had a project called the Grassroots Leadership Program, and it was essentially helping to advocate for issues that international students face. And a small part of that, it's mostly, you know, things like visa issues and things like that. But, of course, undocumented students fall under that. And then having, so I just started that program when I had moved here. It's like a year-long program. So then I came across Dream Zone, and I was like, oh, wow, this is, you know, they had just, I went to the second session that they offered. I think it was in, like, January of 2012. And then it was just, I kind of did more research into the, into what was happening and, you know, it's a much more visible issue here than I had been exposed to before. So yeah, I just became kind of like, I can't believe I'm living, you know, in this community with community members who are so blatantly, you know, discriminated against or disadvantaged for, you know, really no good reason. Not that there's ever a good reason, but you know what I mean? For, you know, they've been here for just as long as, longer than I have, in this state anyway, so, yeah.
So, could you talk a little bit more about the Grassroots Leadership Program and how that relates to undocumented youth or undocumented immigrants?
So, there was four or five issues that, so we were a selected group of like 11 individuals throughout the country, all who work with international students, and we had five kind of federal issues that we were advocating for. A lot of, one was like, one, for instance, one of them was like lifting the cap on green cards, because more than half of green cards go to family members of those who are actually, yeah, and lifting the cap on green cards, because more than half of them go to just family members, not the actual individual. So there's kind of a, you know, people always hit a pretty serious gap there. And then, the other issues were, again, like, you know, helping students to not have to visit their visa office every time they came back from the U.S. So basically things to help make it easier for international students to study in the U.S., But part of that also was, it was just kind of immigration issues in general, and that fit into it that way. So, I mean, considering that undocumented students are quote unquote international, I saw that as a way to a part of something that I wanted to focus on.
Mm-hmm. So to go back to Dream Zone, what is Dream Zone? Can you describe what Dream Zone is for mm-hmm. us?
It's an ally program to create allies and safe spaces for any underrepresented group. Well, it was adapted from Safe Zone, which is kind of the same program for anyone in the LGBT community. So it's kind of in the same way that program creates safe spaces and allies for the LGBT community. It's to create those things for anyone in the undocumented community at ASU.
Okay, and who is Dream Zone for?
Students, faculty, staff, anyone associated with ASU, but it's also reached well beyond ASU into different universities and different high schools and community organizations, things like that.
Can you talk to me about how Dream Zone has reached out into other universities and high schools?
Yeah, so universities came about, there's many of us have presented at different conferences. I presented at a NAFSA regional conference in Montana, and, you know, we had just about what the program is and what it means and, you know, implications that different schools can consider for their own use. That's how their universities find out about it, mostly. And then some find out about it just from, you know, doing research, and they kind of stumble upon this program. Also, I don't know if I think you've already talked to Davier, but he put together a proposal, and we got some recognition for Clinton Global Initiative University Award, whatever, and that kind of took it to a national stage, and I think that brought some attention. And then high schools... we've actually been reached out to by high schools. I'm not sure how each of them found out about it. I think they're different. We're kind of involved in different community organizations, you know, like ADAC and all, you know, QIP, and I don't know if you... I'm sure, yeah, so a lot of those different organizations kind of work together and spread the word that way.
Mm-hmm. What is your involvement with yours or Dream Zone's involvement with ADAC and AZQIP and organizations like that?
You know, definitely support each other, serve as a resource anytime we can. I think each group kind of serves a little bit of a different segment. So if there's someone who's involved in ADAC who is looking to do something at ASU or has questions about ASU, you know, usually they'll refer them to Dream Zone, and, you know, kind of vice versa. And what was the second part of that question?
Actually, you answered that question.
Okay.
You talk about if anybody needs resources, they go to Dream Zone. What kinds of resources do you give those people who come to you?
We have some links on our website, just general, like, different scholarship links, instructions on even, like, how to renew your DECA, kind of various across the board, anything that an undocumented student might need. I think the biggest resource we give is the list of allies that are associated, who have been through the program, who have at least some awareness and a little bit of knowledge, and then work in different sectors of the university. So you can actually do a search by campus, by university department, and even by name if you want, but there's... I forget how many allies. I used to know that. Five or 600, maybe, something like that. Yeah. And so I think that is probably the biggest thing we offer, is having those names published on the web for anyone and their contact info.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that Dream Zone, invites undocumented students that go to ASU to tell their stories. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it comes in, there's, the program has four parts. Kind of awareness of the issues, or awareness of, like, the community, kind of what's happening, knowledge of what some of the issues are. And then the third part is where students, you know, we invite students in firsthand to kind of tell their stories and put a human face on it. And I think that was the most powerful part of the presentation when I went to it, and it still is, I think, every time I facilitate one. And I think a lot of it is because a lot of staff and faculty, I mean, how do you know if someone's undocumented? They don't, like, wear, you know, like, you just, it's just putting a face on an issue that's seemed so hot button, or, like, you know, there are these people who have been labeled by some people as being illegal, like, these, you know, of course, we say that, you know, humans can't be illegal, you know, they're simply don't have the documents that are required at this moment, but I think it's just kind of this, you know, like, wow, that's a person that I've heard so much about, but maybe these people have never met anyone who's undocumented. So just putting that actual face on it, and especially some of the stories are, yeah, some of the most powerful.
What were the other parts of the Dream Zone?
So knowledge, awareness, and then the stories are the third part, and then putting all those attributes to action. Like, these are some steps you can take.
What kinds of, in the knowledge section, what kinds of things do you tell people in the workshop?
Terminology, you know, what is DACA, when did it pass, like, what's the history of it, different local, state, and federal legislation that could affect any undocumented students, things like, you know, can a student who has been issued DACA study abroad, yes or no? Just kind of some basic, again, like, terminology and up-to-date issues, I guess.
Have you had any pushback when you talk about terminology, using the word dream or dreamer in your workshops, or...?
Pushback, like, from, like, an audience member, or...?
Or from an undocumented student that shares their story, has there already been any kind of tension with the word dreamer?
Not that I've heard, no.
So have you taken part in any action on campus or any kinds of kind of demonstrations or anything like that that has to deal with the undocumented youth movement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just today they had a kind of a little demonstration about tuition. ABOR has recently, I think just today or yesterday, I don't know if they've instituted a policy that students with DACA can get tuition at 150% of in-state. And so this demonstration was asking for, you know, for basically saying tuition equality is 1-to-1. It's not 150, you know, it's 100%. So that, and then various things throughout the community. There was a protest whenever the Attorney General was suing Maricopa Community Colleges for to try to take away in-state tuition for undocumented students, and I participated in a few of those.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Like, what happened during these demonstrations, what you saw, experienced?
Yeah, so a lot of them were just at the Attorney General's office, and... you know, it was actually through a different organization that I heard about it, but it was people from all around the community, from the faith community, from kind of the political community, kind of just different faces. And one of the ones I went to, there were some undocumented students who, you know, were burning kind of fake copies of their diplomas and dressed in, you know, graduation gear and just saying, you know, I'm in community college right now, and this could be taken away from me, and things like that. And it was kind of more or less a sit-in in the lobby. A couple of us may have gotten detained, but just because we didn't leave whenever it was closing time, so.
So you actually took part in the actual sit-in?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how did you, and you said you heard about through an organization, do you remember mm-hmm. what organization that was?
Yes, CBA, Citizens for a Better Arizona, and I'd actually heard about it through a Dream Zone colleague.
And how do you hear about events like this? Is it social media, through word of mouth, usually?
That one was through word of mouth, and then I joined their social media, and that's how I learned about future events, too.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the tuition, the tension about tuition at ASU at the moment?
Mm-hmm. So recently when DACA was passed, well, a few years ago now, the Maricopa Community Colleges agreed to consider a work permit, enough of a proof that the student is in-state. And whereas that was never in the ABOR policy, so the universities can't quite adopt that. They would have to take some sort of action on their own. There's been a lot of back and forth, since DACA came through with that. And ever since Proposition 300 passed in 2006, that's what took away in-state tuition from undocumented students. I'm sorry, I don't know if... Hopefully, I don't know if you know all this or... I don't. Okay.
Look, just tell me whatever
you want to tell me. So, since 2006 has been the huge issue of in-state tuition no longer being available to those individuals, specifically excluding them, actually. And so it's kind of just in the same... And then just yesterday or today is when it was brought down a little bit, but not... really sufficiently, from what I can gather.
And have you been to any of the ABOR meetings that have to deal with this tuition?
I went to the one just a few weeks ago, but I wasn't able to go. They're all during the workday, so I wasn't able to go during the tuition part.
Mm-hmm.
Not during the tuition part. No.
Okay. So have you attended any, specific organizations events? I know you said you went to the demonstration, but have you been to any, meetings for AJAC or anything like that?
No, I haven't been to any AJAC meetings.
Have you been to any organizations meetings?
Not in a while. Except for Citizens for a Better Arizona, I've been to a few of theirs, but...
Okay, and do they focus a lot on undocumented issues, or is it mostly just a lot of just political
issues? The ones that I went to were all focused specifically on undocumented, but they do a range of other things, too.
Okay.
Like different politicians, doing whatever it is that those politicians are doing wrong, trying to bring that to light, things like that.
So just to go back to Dream Zone a little bit,
mm-hmm.
So why do you think that Dream Zone is important to ASU or to the movement in general?
I think it was the first of its kind type of organization, and I think that people hadn't really thought about it, so it just brings awareness to an issue that's, very, potent, or I don't know what the right word for that is, but in Arizona, in our community. And I think that it shows undocumented students that, there is, a place at ASU for you. I know the tuition thing is pretty much a giant barrier, but showing them that the ASU community cares, that there are people here who want them here and who will fight for them in whatever ways, possible.
Do you consider yourself an activist?
I'd say so, I guess. Yeah.
How would you define an activist?
Someone who either takes part or participates in or speaks out against or speaks out for something that they feel strongly about, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think... Okay, so let's go to, what are your thoughts on on legislation like the DREAM Act and DACA?
In general?
Mm-hmm.
Sadness comes to mind with the DREAM Act. That's what I did my research on for my program, and just you know, researching all of, you know, the kind of the life and death of it, really. And I, especially, I was completing my research in December of just, of the year that the Senate passed comprehensive immigration. And so they were waiting on the House, and there was all this talk that it might happen, you know, in that December of 2013. And then nothing happened, and then there was more talk about it in the spring of last year, and then things just went towards campaigns, and it hasn't been brought up since. So, I mean, I feel a little bit hopeless for the DREAM Act itself, just because, and I've only followed it for a few years, but especially for those who are now in their mid to late 20s who have been waiting on something for 10 years and have missed, you know, half of their, or the beginning of their adult life because of all these stupid barriers that are preventing them from being, you know, full citizens of this country. So, and then in terms of DACA, I think DACA is great. And I think it was, you know, courageous of the administration to do that. It's not enough, clearly, but I think there was hopes that more would happen, that that was kind of the first step and that Congress could back that up, but that didn't happen. And so I like the fact that it's being expanded, but of course it continues to be challenged. So, I mean, it's something, I don't, it's, when I hear the DREAM Act, it kind of hurts my heart a little bit. And when I hear of DACA, it's a glimmer, but it's also a fading glimmer. I mean, it's, now it's 2 years, it's over 2 years old, and people are worried about renewing and things like that. And I was actually at, I was in Washington, D.C. for the Grassroots Leadership Program the day that DACA was signed into being, basically, and we got to go to the White House and, like, be part of the announcement. It was, I never thought I would be in that position, but it was really, like, looking back, it was really powerful experience, and one that I had so much hope, you know, and then here we are a few years later. But, you know, it was exciting, and it was something, and it worked. And I think the best part is that it worked. You know, for the first 6 months, everyone was nervous, but then it actually helped people and got them into the working force and put this little Band-Aid to allow them to, you know, at least be here for a little bit. So, I don't know.
When you were in D.C. for that signing, did you see any, like, organizations there that were, like, what kinds of organizations did you see there, if you did?
I don't know. They invited only a couple of representatives from NAFSA, and because I was part of that program, they offered it to me, and I was like, sure. But it was mostly, someone asked me if I was an attorney. It was a lot of attorneys. It was, people from the faith community, like different, I couldn't tell you what, but yeah, there was like breakout sessions afterwards. Labor, people from the labor community. Yeah, it was kind of a strange, there's probably only like 50 to 80 people, maybe. So yeah, it was a weird thing.
Did you say breakout sessions after the signing?
Mm-hmm.
What were those breakout sessions about?
To talk about, you know, how these different people from different communities could work together in helping to implement, get the word out, what they could do in their both literal, like, their home communities, wherever they lived, and then also within their, whoever they affiliate with, communities.
Is that what your group specifically talked about?
Yeah, there was only two groups, and they were kind of large, and so... And there was only an hour, I think, allotted for it. So I remember I just kind of listened, and there was only like four or five people that were kind of talking back and forth, and they weren't super, you know, incredibly productive as they probably could have been. I don't know how the other group was, but my group wasn't, you know. I mean, I learned some new things, but I honestly can't remember what the specifics were.
That's really great. What did you bring back to Arizona from that experience? What did you bring back to Dream Zone, to your work as a activist support
advisor?
Advisor.
Yeah. So one a few things I did through that organization and after that meeting was we were supposed to meet with each of our members of Congress. So I met with Jeff Flake and or his people, Dan Schweikert's legislative rep, and then McCain's legislative rep in their offices here. And each time I took, you know, at least someone from the there only one person that came actually each time from who was a dreamer, quote unquote, just to kind of let them know, like, this is what's, you know, this. And we went over multiple issues, but a big part of it was the undocumented issue, and we were listened to. I was more of the, I mean, when I brought someone else in, that person really had the story, and so they more listened to that person, which was the point of it, so that was good. And I think the person also didn't fit maybe the stereotypical dreamer profile. She was Eastern European and blonde hair, blue-eyed, you know, and she was undocumented. I think that shocked some people, and they were like, you know, tell me more. So that kind of put a different light on it, I'd say, hopefully. So just kind of making different congressional members aware of, you know, things that hopefully that their constituents are concerned about, because we were their constituents. And then I hosted like a community roundtable event where it was at Phoenix College. And it was just, I had a few speakers come. I had Ruben Gallego, who's now a representative for Congress. At the time, he was just a state rep. Oh, I don't mean just a state rep, but he was a state rep. And then Anna Tovar, they were both incredible. She's the whip for at the state, at some state level. So they came and just talked about, and Danny Ortega, who was an incredible speaker. And he was, he's a ASU alum, attorney, and that he was recommended to me by someone I was speaking to at the White House, because I was kind of working a little bit with them through NAFSA. So they recommended him, and then I reached out to the other ones. So that was a cool, and I invited members from the faith community, higher ed, who else came? Business community. I think we had like 20 or 30 people.
Were people receptive to this kind of discussion forum, kind of?
Yeah, I think so. You know, each kind of person talked about different issues at state, local, federal level, and what, you know, we as a community can look out for and do. It was just called nonpartisan community roundtable on, I think it was just comprehensive immigration reform. That's what we called it. So it wasn't, you know, it was a lot of different things, but yeah.
Have you done anything else other like that are like that?
No, not since that.
You seem really invested in this kind of movement and the political side of it. Has anybody that you've met that influenced that, or does that just come out of being an advocate earlier in life, or?
I think the background that I got from that I used to work for the Human Rights Campaign, and my job was to organize congressional meetings in different districts, so I had a lot of experience. You know, it's until you know that process, it seems really daunting, but I had to do it like 60 hours a week, so I was like, oh, that's easy, I can totally do that. And it was part of this program, and I was like, I'm the perfect candidate for that, like, let me do it. And then you know, getting in Dream Zone, I think the thing that I like to talk about most, I'm certainly not as well versed on teaching it and talking about some of the issues as like Davier and Jesus, like Liz. They're all just incredible at being able to answer questions, and like I you know, can be shaking my research sometimes. But the part that I love to talk about is how any community member can change things for, you know. By the end of the workshop, people are like, I can't believe this is happening. I just met these students. They're really emotionally, you know, people cry all the time. and they're really moved, and then I think that's the time when they're like, well, what can we do? You know what? And that's when I like to come in and be like, this is what you can do. You can meet with your representative, send an email, call them, you know, like that's what, I mean, I still believe in the democratic process, you know, I mean, with enough calls and enough nudging, they have to listen. It's just a matter of organizing that in a large scale. So that's something that I felt confident in, just because I had that experience. And so that's one way that I saw that I might be able to help.
Do you see that kind of, so people are actually really receptive of that, like how do you, these are the things that you can change. Has anybody gone to Dream Zone more than once, or?
I think we have had a couple that have come back, yeah, to kind of learn more. I think it's still kind of an early, I mean, it's been around for a few years now, I guess 3 years. I mean, I think after 1 or 2 years, people might, yeah, come back. But yeah, after the first year, there wasn't a ton. But I mean, because we do, it is kind of the same presentation a little bit, except for updates, obviously, of anything that's happening legislatively. But yeah, I mean, that's something that we need in Dream Zone, is like someone that's dedicated to work with our database and get our community members involved. And that's what we're actually currently meeting about this month, is to try to figure out what's our next direction, you know, how are we going to move this forward and keep people involved and get them more involved and things like that.
That's awesome. What kinds of things do you see for Dream Zone in the future? How do you think it's going to expand or evolve?
Hopefully we can get like a staff member because we all just do it on a volunteer basis right now, and I think that's really just difficult to maintain because everyone has full-time jobs, and that's, you know, it's all done on the side, basically. And so after, you know, a few years, it gets hard to figure out who's doing what and, you know, have a clear direction. So we're working on that now. So having a dedicated staff member, at least one, you know, would be tremendous. I think that's inhibited by the lack of undocumented students that we currently have enrolled, probably. And what's inhibiting that is the tuition problem. So I think it's kind of a big cycle. So yeah, those are some of the, like if we, I think a dedicated staff would be the best thing we could do. And that's probably what we're going for. I know that there was a meeting with the Dean of Students last week, and we're supposed to meet in a couple of weeks to see what happened.
Do you find, because of the lack of students, do you find it, like, getting funding and things like that difficult?
I think because of all of the recognition that Dream Zone has got nationally and at these different conferences, I mean, it was kind of a really hot, like, big deal for the first year and a half or so. And then I think it's, and so that's how, you know, there was a little bit of funding originally, and so we still have kind of some, but it's kind of, we've got to reapply, and now it's like, well, what's our next direction? So I think that will be a challenge. It wasn't at first because of all the awards and all the things like that, but that's kind of, now there's got to be some kind of, again, new direction or something. I think that we'll definitely face challenges.
So you said that the Dream Zone was accepted for the Clinton Global Initiative. What other kinds of awards or recognition has Dream Zone gotten?
We just put together this report, and so I think we got the Chicano Faculty and Staff Association. There was like a program award for that. We were nominated for a Cesar Chavez Community Award. I don't remember if we got that one or not. We may have won. I think the Clinton one was the biggest one, because that's something that was like on the national scale. I know there was like, the list is on a Google Doc, but those are all the ones I can think off the top of my head.
Can you talk about that experience of actually winning the global initiative?
It was great. I mean, it was, you know, something that I was just all over social media. That's, I dedicated my life to that for like, you know, I don't know, a couple of weeks. And then Davier was the only one that actually went to St. Louis to accept it. I think it was kind of a letdown in the end because there was no funding or anything attached to it. It was just like a basketball that was like signed, and I was kind of like, really? All that for, I mean, it was national recognition. I think that was the biggest part of it, but I think there may have been some belief that there was some kind of funding attached to it because there was all this hype, you know, about it. And I think that was on behalf of the Clinton Global Initiative. I don't know. I was only just told that we were nominated, so I was just trying to help us win it. So it was great. I mean, it was like again, Dr. Crowe sent all of us, you know, personal thank you notes, and like it was a big deal for the university, I think, especially having just come out of SB 1070, and like I think it was really great for ASU. But in terms of for Dream Zone, it didn't, I think that helped us secure university funding. So maybe in the end it worked out, but it was super exciting, but it was kind of like, I think it wasn't super clear what was going to happen with that award, and so it was good and bad, I guess.
So you said Dr. Crowe actually sent you thank you notes. Do you get support from the administration in that regard?
I would say so. I mean, he actually put together a letter of like 50 different colleges and universities to Congress in, I think it was the third round that the Dream Act was being considered. I think it was 2009. I certainly feel supported by the administration. Not so much by ABOR, because I know that they're politically tied to, or I know what they have to do and satisfy, you know, different state players and different politicians and whatnot. So, but yeah, as far as Dr. Crowe and his administration, absolutely. And the Dean of Students and all the other organizations on campus, like everyone's very supportive.
Where do you see the undocumented immigrant movement going in the future? Like, what are your hopes for it?
I hope that something has to be passed at the federal level. Like, that's it. Something has to be passed at the federal level, and it has to be passed through the House. And it's not going to happen until someone new, like, not someone new, but it's impossible. I mean, they kind of, from what I can tell, I don't think it's going to happen before Obama leaves office. I think it's going to be up to the new, I think people are going to run on that as part of their platform. And I think it's going to be up to the new administration to, I think Obama's done all he can with the current Congress. I know I'm totally getting political, but those are just my very personal thoughts. But yeah, I think it'll be, unfortunately, I think it's up to the new, whatever the new president will be.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about that comes to mind?
Not really. So this project is for Arizona specifically?
It's Arizona and California, so we're partnering with UCLA. Cool. They're doing their own interviews, and then we're focusing on Arizona, mostly the Phoenix Valley area for now. We hope that it goes nationally, but yeah, that's for now.
Who else? I mean, how many people are you talking, or what's like the scope in terms of your interviews?
Right now, we are looking at, I think we've got, UCLA has, I think, 15 interviews with an organization there called IDEAS. Mm-hmm. And then we're kind of all over the board. We have, we talked to David Garcia, we have interviews with Davier, and I think we have, with undocumented youth, we have, I think, 5 to 10.
Oh, great.
Right now. And then we have a few allies through Facilitation Dream Zone. Our scope is, we want to tell a story of the undocumented youth movement, but we also want to get the whole story from all kinds of different sides. And so our scope is rather big.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what we want to try and do.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I just need you to give consent to put this online. It will be available for download on our website, and it will be public. But if you give your consent.
I consent.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. Sure. This has been Holly Solis interviewing Monica Keys for the Undocumented Voices Project on April 28th, 2015.